In this episode of What the Prophets Say, join myself, Emma Stark, and Sam Robertson as we talk very deeply about the pain of separation that we believe God is walking us into in these coming days. Hello, loyal listeners, and a very warm welcome to another episode of What the Prophets Say with me, Emma Stark, and the joy and delight that is the ever-present
Sam Robertson.
Ever-present. That's almost like a higher being, divine.
That kind of
yes.
That kind of is, isn't it? Yeah, ever-present. Yes.
But you're certainly a man of great faithfulness. How are you doing today?
Yes, I am well. We have our coffee in hand. Although this is coffee from our own house to start our days today. Just we're working our way up because as you've been listening to us over the last maybe 8 episodes, you'll know that Suzanne's been feeding us Lazarus-style coffee that could raise the dead.
Do you know what she did actually last night? I don't know whether she can... She's the class behind the glass. She did actually text me, somebody owns Lazarus Coffee, but they're American-based. So you may have to quickly scoop up before this goes live the domain names for Europe, Suzanne.
Yeah, you should.
Just so you can become the Lazarus coffee champion in Europe, yes. So we say the class behind the glass today is producer Todd from Well Good Media, Todd Weller. I've always thought that was a very clever name.
That is.
So putting his surname in Well Good Media. And then we have Luke Sampson, yes, waving at us, doing editing, audio engineering, keeping then my son, Peter Stark, who is doing some editing for us as well, keeping the ParTV.app where it needs to be.
Yes.
Before he goes to university. In fact, Peter is going to the university to study film production that Todd Weller used to be the lecturer at.
He is.
So how glorious. What we're hoping is that Todd might help him out, if all things. Yes, if he needs.
Absolutely.
Yes. My husband is there. He's the most classy behind the glass. Oh. So there we go. Suzanne is there. And actually, I think my other two children are there, but I think they're here for the candy, cookies and pakora at lunchtime.
Are
I don't
heard?
Actually know are they, whether they're doing anything useful. So that is it. It's a whole family. We're just missing your Bella.
I know, I should have brought her today.
Yeah, she could have sat with my Jessica eating sweets
and pakora. That's what a way to spend a Thursday.
Spend the day. So anything else noteworthy you need to report?
I don't think so.
about the life and times of Sam Robertson. People love a backstory.
I do. I feel like there should be, but I don't know if anything exciting has happened
since the last 12 hours.
Since the last 12 hours.
Talking.
I'm trying to think.
Though you were teaching last night to our online community, and you tried to limit yourself to an hour.
And I got excited.
An hour 45?
I got really excited.
Were you literally spontaneously teaching for an extra 45 minutes?
Yeah, and you know that way where... Like when you sermon prep, you have a thought in your head. Do you get this? And you never know if it's going to preach or not until you do it.
And you kind of do your due diligence, your worship, and you don't know whether the wind or the spirit will be in it till you're standing there.
And then you have moments where you preach it and you go, oh, probably not going to preach that again. Or that went a bit flat. And then you have moments where your thought becomes a sermon in itself and it almost preaches itself, and that was it last
night.
Well,
for an hour 45, can you summate it in 30 seconds for us right now? Is that even remotely possible?
I was on the Jesus who spoke with authority, who taught with authority, and I'm teaching this class for our prophetic nest on foundations for leadership, so basic introductions to leadership, but just these thoughts about the lack we have in the world of leaders who stand with authority, and the difference between management and authority, and how the spirit realm responds to authority, how the spirit realm responds to rulership, and the contention over who's going to rule, who's going to have authority. And so I'm in it. I have many thoughts that I'm trying to not get excited and share because I want to keep them for the conference as well. Do you know that way? I'm like, oh, there's so much going on. Yeah. But I do really think we're in that wrestle over who will rule, who will have authority, who will govern.
Management versus authority.
Absolutely.
There's a great thought to dine out on.
Absolutely.
And for those of you who don't know, our prophetic nests, like eagles' nests, but we call them prophetic nests, just our own terminology, it, is for those who've come through our Raising Prophets program And then they begin prophetic groups in their own regions. And then they pull together their own and gather their own members. Mm. But we look after the nest leaders who've already done a fair good journey with us in a kind of our culture. How many nests will we have at the end of this new onboarding process?
At the end of this new onboarding, we must be 250 minimum. I think we probably have 220 nest leaders that we'll have trained by the end of this cycle, probably slightly more. But most nest leaders who have done it for a year or two end up with multiple nests.
Because they're so good at gathering.
Because they're so good at gathering. Uh-huh. Yeah. And so we have some nest leaders who have 8 nests.
That's incredible.
That they lead, and leaders who lead that. So I think we were, I was chatting to one of our members of staff who helps me look after that. We can conservatively estimate that through our nests, we are shadowing and leading and shaping a minimum of probably about 5,000 prophets and prophetic people.
Around the world.
Yeah. Most of whom have never come to Glasgow.
Fascinating.
Or can't come to Glasgow or in far outreach places through these nests.
Because I think we're so in love with Jesus and his voice.
Absolutely.
And what the Trinity wants to say to us and this love of scripture and the love of the Logos and the love of the Rhema and the love of bold truth telling, which kind of does segue us quite nicely into what we wanted to talk about today. And for those of you who have been following, particularly Par Church on Sundays, you'll have heard since I came back from some time off, I really felt quite heartbroken, I suppose, to be in Isaiah 66, verse 6. And you'll have heard maybe 2 episodes ago that we referenced this. Let me read it to you. Hear that uproar from the city. Hear that noise from the temple. So the Lord is sensitizing ears that it's more than he's saying, come on, you've got to be aware of some things that are happening. You cannot put your head in the ground like the proverbial ostrich and just dull yourself to what's it's this call to engage with something that is beyond your four walls. It's the hearing of something beyond your standard boundaries. So the Lord is calling in this sensitization. He's calling you to an understanding of what he's doing in this day. He does not want you to be dull, and he does not want you to be ill-informed.
That's very good.
So he says, hear that uproar from the city, hear that noise from the temple. In other words, you are for more than what you perhaps thought you were for. You are here to understand the rhythms of God in the nations. And then it goes on to say, it is the sound of the Lord repaying his enemies all they deserve.
Wow.
And the Lord is saying, you're going to have to attune yourself to noises that are not kind and lovely in the way we would prefer them to be, but they are the goodness of God who actually deals with evil and deals with sin and comes to cities and temples, in other words, his own people, and wider non-believing communities.
Yes.
In other words, he says, you're going to now live in the sound of drama, the sound of great judgments, the sound of soldiers slaying, the sound of the poor shaking, the sound of war, the sound of confused voices. It is no longer the soundtrack of an ordinary life. Mm-hmm. It is not common calamities. Mm. It is the days of great disturbances, of continual thunder and continual lightnings. And the need to then pray and say, God, I need to hear, but I need to understand as well.
Absolutely. This is really good. I think this call in this verse is saying, look, you're going to have to hear something that is outside of your own little world. Mm-hmm. Don't get so distracted, or don't get so focused just on your life that you miss the invitation of God to have a responsibility that is outward looking. And it's both a city noise and a temple noise.
Yeah.
And that is there where we're probably going to push more into here, that you're hearing, we can understand an uproar from the city when God's repaying his enemies. But he's saying, no, look, I'm doing it in the temple as well. For me, that is an initial instruction to us as the people of God to hear something outside of our own little worlds. Don't get so absorbed just with what's happening in your own life. Don't just be listening for what's happening in your house, what's happening in your family. Hear what's going on in the nation's life. Hear what's going on in the church at large. And the sound comes from the city, the place where there is no belief, but it also comes from the temple, the place where there should be belief. And the sense of the noise, the uproar, the calamity, the chaos is going to come from, it will feel like almost everywhere. You know, it will surround us from every direction. There will be a noise. And for our listeners, I really want to give an urge that this is a season where you've got to learn what it is to hear more than just for yourself, to hear more than just what's going on in your own little life. Mm-hmm. Now, if we can push this verse, remembering that we're in Isaiah chapter 66, this verse comes right before the great verses that we all love of, can a nation be born or changed in a day? And we often prophesy those scriptures of nations that are born in a day, nations that are changed in a day. You know, we believe that God in his power can turn a nation around in 24 hours. But before you get to that portion of movements, of birthing, of a new wave of something for nations, this verse says, look, you're going to hear calamities. You're going to hear an uproar. And it's an uproar in response of God who is enacting justice against those who oppose him.
It's heartbreaking.
I think it is.
It's terrifying, but it's necessary to be forewarned.
Yes.
And Jesus then picks up that concept when he's prophesying himself about wars and rumors of wars, which we really have talked about an awful lot from Matthew 24. The Lord kind of went on with this thought with me, and he used the word defilement. He said, you will hear the exposure of great defilement, which I actually think is just God playing around in what he's already written in Isaiah 66. It's lining right up with what we just read. You will hear the sound of great defilement exposed. Now, I want to catch my breath there, because part of me goes, God, can we take any more? I mean, what more do we need to bear in terms of exposure and pain in the nations? And yet there is a sense of, come on, Emma, you're a prophet amongst a company of prophets, and those who I've tasked with hearing me, and there's a group of us and all in different continents of the earth. And God is speaking to that cohort of international prophets and saying, you're going to have to tell the people that there's going to be the sound of defilement exposed. And for me, that is the almost the gut-wrenching, lamenting, horror sound of the pain in the house of God. And we're not very good at the wail and the noise of lament.
Totally.
And you're also going to hear the heartbreak of the victims who have sat under things that are now going to be exposed, because God does come to repay. And that's fascinating, because we like a sanitized version of justice and a cleaned up version of righteousness. But here we have the sound of the Lord repaying his enemies. And that is as much his own who have accidentally become his enemies, as much as those who willingly in the cities were his enemies. But what I want to do for the rest of this particular episode is sit in the thing the Lord then said to me. He said, you're going to hear the signs of great separation. Now, Sam, you and I for a long time have talked about the era and the age of the church split.
Yes.
I think that prophetic word from us is probably about 18 months to 2 years old. And the sense there was that the church will split in along the lines of those who love the Spirit, those who hate the Spirit, those who are liberal versus those who are traditional in their application of the Logos, the Word of God. But the Lord started to talk to me about a separation, and I'm like, who are you? Who are you separating here? Because we've already had this concept of complete split. We've already seen that. We've already seen the disinvitation of the spirit in place. We've already seen the setting in stone of the liberal versus the more traditional biblical agendas. So if we're adding on the concept of the Lord saying this, the sound of great separation, what on earth are you talking about, God, that is different to the epoch of the church split? None of this is nice. Do you want to comment on that before I think God might have meant there?
Yeah, I think it's something further than just the church split, because it's different language. Mm-hmm. Where the split is very much it comes with language of a falling out or a parting of ways. But separation is a strategic word. It sounds like God in his hands moving people groups in separate directions. He is drawing lines or creating gaps between people. And I think this word of separation is going to be in and around the atmosphere for quite some time.
Yeah.
And we're going to be walking it out on various levels for the foreseeable. We can see the church split. We know it. It's in motion. You know, the disinvitation of the Spirit, it's in motion. It's not really a prophetic word anymore because it's being fulfilled and it's happening.
Yep.
Whereas this word of separation is something that we are aware of is in the atmosphere that is about to hit and is about to take on form.
And when we talk about separation, oh my days, you got to be careful that there's not an elitism thought in you at all when we come to discuss this.
Absolutely.
That it must be done with sorrow and it must be done with your heads bowed when we say what we're next going to say. The Lord then took me into the fivefold, the apostles, the prophets, the shepherds, the teachers, and the evangelists. And he said, there's where you're going to see separation. Now, my immediate knee-jerk response to the Father was, oh, no, because we have so few who really love the concepts of the fivefold, Ephesians 4 and Ephesians 2. Surely, God, there's the group that need to be building and together and saying, what is an apostle? What is a prophet? How do we work together? How are we Ephesians 2 foundation stones with Christ Jesus? All of that. How are we raising the church into any modicum of maturity and training and equipping, which those passages in Ephesians outline? And then the Lord said this to me, and I want to deal particularly with the apostles and then the prophets for the rest of our time. He said to me, the apostles have rejected the non-negotiables of their function. And the apostles are using that call. And of course, the gifts of God, the calls of God are given without revoke. So God can't suddenly not make you a prophet or not make you an apostle, because those are gifts given without revoke. In other words, they're yours forever.
Yes.
So it looks like his modus operandi is to separate rather than say, well, I'm going to take that off you, because then God would be a liar if he revokes the callings and the gifts he's given you. But he says the apostles have not released people. They have gathered for control. They have not given platform or promotion or space. Rather, they have become the man or the woman of God. They have disconnected with the Father heart, and they have not reclaimed the fullness of the relationship with my fathering, so that they are no longer trustworthy, but they are ones who are keeping people rather than speaking release, which is part of what the Father does as he grows you up and trusts you. And the sense of the apostles being made to be true fathers and mothers, and therefore needing to be deep in their relationship with Father God, and squandering that place and rejecting intimacy with the Father, rejecting connection with the Father, and somehow getting segued or sidelined into a misunderstanding of functionality and rejecting those non-negotiables. And God saying, I'm going to actually have to bring separation between the apostles.
Wow. I think that's huge. And the call on the apostles who are listening, and to make sure that in your heart, first, you are right in the areas of intimacy with the Father and of nearness to the Father. But that sense of, and we see it, you know, time and time again, of domination, mm-hmm. control, you know, you're only blessed and anointed when you're with me. When you leave me, you lose your anointing.
Dangerous,
you need to stay here.
Dangerous talk.
And we have to deal with countless people who have had that said to them,
yeah.
And over them, and lived such a controlled and limited life. Mm-hmm. And God's saying, for me, what bothers me and what breaks my heart is when God has to use such strident language, it tends to not be his first chance that he gives his people, and that it tends to come after the offer of change. You know,
true.
God is slow to anger, so he gives an offer. But if now he's saying, I'm actually in separation here with these apostles, I'm actually in separation with the fivefold, that yeah. would tell me that people have been hard-hearted and slow to move to previous offers of change and transformation.
Yeah.
And now God's saying, look, I've had enough, and I need to now, in my righteous anger, make mm-hmm. some things right.
I've lost count of the number of apostles that I've said to, you know, we need a working group of apostles. Yeah. We need them to coalesce. We need them to be in the rooms together yeah. where they're looking at the strategy of how you raise and send. Those particularly with very obvious national or international calls, because not everybody has that. And I have found a great resistance. Now, mm-hmm. I understand there's a sense of overwhelm, that our jobs are hard enough without, you know, come on, do more. Come on, think wider. Come on, you know, put time in your diaries to be together. So I can understand that there's a very genuinely a burdened weariness that comes upon people in senior leadership, because we all do that and have to wade through that on occasions. But for me, it is the shrugging off of the fullness of the weight of the national and international call that they've done so easily, where they wanted to focus on their own portion of the pie rather than understand mm. that they needed to agree together for mm. what did it look like to really equip and send en masse,
exactly. yeah.
and hold each other to account yeah. as apostles in their intimacy with the Father and in their sending. And we are deficient worldwide. There are some little regions that manage to get good unity and agreement, but majoritively, wherever I set my foot, we are missing the canopy, or let's put it as foundation places, whichever you prefer, but we're missing those pieces of agreed sending where apostles sharpen each other in their functionality.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a refusal to work with the heart of the Father and a refusal to even yeah. work with each other.
And even where we do see some attempts, it tends to be, you all agree under me. You know, you
yes.
all gather under me.
Yes.
Rather than, I think, the heart of God, which is that you all gather as friends
yes.
and family around a table uh-huh. who sharpen and share life together and provoke one another into greater intimacy, and then into being people who are, it's easy to release others.
So what you're going to see, I think, is obviously we talked about the church split, but you're going to see apostolic groups just agree that they can't run alongside each other.
Yeah.
But I don't think they will altogether get the nuances of what is happening here or why they are feeling, you know, I just can't work with you. But I actually believe that our job as the prophets is to say, this is why you're going to hear the signs of separation,
mm.
because you wouldn't release and you wouldn't keep a deep connection with the Father. And we're going to see then new books be written, new cohorts be mm-hmm. formed. And the sign of separation is incredibly painful, because in it comes a sense of, I can't work with you. Now, I can't work with you is rarely handled well by the people of God. It's rarely done, I want to honor you, but I just feel like God has got a different way for
yeah.
me. I just feel like it's a right thing for me to be over here and for me to, you know, do the movement that God has asked me to produce, and the gathering place and the sending place. But mostly the sign of separation is a painful, ugly reputation, mudslinging, undermining, crisis signed, rather than the acknowledgement of, oh, we're actually approaching this call slightly differently and we need to be in different places. We rarely do that well. So when the Lord is talking about initially here the sign of me repaying my enemies, and then hear the sign of defilement exposed, and hear the sign or the noise of separation, I actually think it's going to be the sign of reputational damage.
Yeah, and I think that's probably what makes us, you know, when you first released that word, it made some of us go,
oh no. Oh. Yeah, I know.
Because we've been through
enough
of seeing splits. And can I say, nobody ever wants to prophesy that.
No.
And when you've been through a split or been through some form of a division, nobody wants to relive that again.
Never.
And there is a kind of blissful ignorance where we all want to say, it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
And we're all going to agree. Yeah. And everyone's going to have a revelation. And all of a sudden, we're all going to be on board together. And so there's not great pleasure in prophesying something like this. But we know that we have to be accurate to what God is saying now. And I think God is very strident in the earth, that he has these leaders, particularly apostles and prophets, but all of the fivefold, that he has at least some who have not left their non-negotiables.
Yes. Now, if I push into the prophets here, which I suppose is you're in my area of expertise, and the Lord said the same thing to me about the prophets, you're going to hear the sign of the separation of the prophets. Now, that's closer to home, as close to home for most of our listeners who have learned to love the voice of God over the years like we have. And the Lord said this, whilst the apostles forgot the association and the deep interaction with the Father, the prophets have forgotten the deep overwhelm of the Spirit, which of course is in back in the book of Peter, where he talks about the prophets being those who were carried along by the Spirit. And he said they have moved into a place where they have forgotten how to be in relationship with the Spirit, and that will need reclaimed. Now, we have spent, I think, in the last five or six of our podcasts here on What the Prophets Say, we here in the headquarters in Glasgow of the Global Prophetic Alliance has spent a lot of time looking at the prophets who have been in the prosperity gospel, wealth, comfort versus challenge, politics versus kingdom. And I actually felt like the Lord is saying, you've taught people to not fear me, and I'm going to have to separate you.
Wow.
And that really is the nub. Although you can say, look, prosperity gospel, rah, rah, there's a problem there, and there is, and rah, rah, there's a problem with politics. Ultimately, it's a deep misunderstanding of what it is to have the Spirit overwhelm you so you know what it is to fear God. And actually, we're so playing in the waters of things that are not his kingdom. And we are wanting the glory of man, the raising of man, the men in the right places, that there's no fear of the Lord. And I actually think the prophets are going to separate along those kind of lines where they are more in logic and self-serving and, man-honoring than they are in God-honoring and revelation.
Yeah, and the problem is what we're seeing is then the prophets who are stewarding the Spirit of God, are overwhelmed, prophesy words that bring the fear of the Lord. And because it's so out of the norm, those words are rejected. So, those words are resisted again.
I mean, this is it. I mean, I think it's time to go into two scriptures that you and I were talking about before we came on air today. Just kind of, you can feel and hear the soberness in our voices today.
We would rather not have to have this conversation.
No, and we're now in Ezekiel 3. This is massively challenging when Ezekiel is in the beginning days of understanding how his call is going to be measured. In other words, what are you actually going to hear a well done, good and faithful servant for? He's clearly in Ezekiel 1 had overwhelming visions, wheels within wheels, God seated on the throne outside the circle of the earth by the end of chapter 1. We're still in visionary mode in chapter 2. There's some of the most wild visions in scripture, and they are very difficult to illustrate. Many have tried to capture the fullness of those overwhelming visions, almost the spectacular nature of the realm that God inhabits and I use that word very deliberately, it's potency, it's strangeness, it's weirdness. Here is a prophet set apart, a strange and weird. And there's no doubt about that in Ezekiel, one of the strangest and the weirdest. And then suddenly by Ezekiel 3, he's understanding what he is to do with that strangeness and weirdness. Mm-hmm, do you want to read it to us?
In Ezekiel chapter 3, it's his job description. And so from 16 onwards, you really get God describing who Ezekiel's to be. Verse 16, you know, son of man, I have made you a watchman for the people of Israel. So you better hear the word I speak and give them warning from me. But here's where we want to really focus. Verse 18, yeah. This is God speaking to Ezekiel about what Ezekiel is expected to do. When I say to a wicked person, you will surely die, and you, Ezekiel, do not warn them or speak out to dissuade them from their evil ways in order to save their life, that wicked person will die for their sin. But you, Ezekiel, I will hold you accountable for their blood.
Now, in all of that, we're seeing words that God is in, meaning business. God is not messing about here. This is not feather and light fluff type stuff. What he's saying here is there's a kind of word that will rescue and restore a man. Mm-hmm. There's a sort of word that is going to actually sound very strong, that is warning, that is strident, that you might interpret in modern day hearing as being a harsh, maybe a bit over the top, maybe just too much because of our over sense of I need to be above and beyond in my tolerance of you. I need to say things like you do you rather than you do Christ. I need to be like, I want to honor your truth, or I want to be respect. I mean, like, you know, you get to choose how you steward your life. And we're so branded, and I mean branded, so deeply marked by those kind of societal norms, that the thought of somebody saying, look, I need to save your life, and here are some warning things, and I need to give you some high level alerts, that is utterly repugnant to most of us these days. It's repellent to our ears because it's not massaging our sensitivities in the modern age. And yet God is saying to Ezekiel, if you don't and something goes wrong in their lives, I'll judge you because of your silence. And I really think tragically we are seeing the separation of the prophets over not will you speak with love. That's a given. You have to. Not will you not have redemption in your words. The spirit by instinct is redemptive. But will you actually be brave enough to say something strong, something perhaps confrontational, something that says, come on, this is not the highest and the best for you. And that is measured by God as righteous behavior in a prophet. Oh, how far we are from that.
And, you know, we can understand it when it's to a wicked person, but verse 20 says the same about a righteous person. When a righteous person turns from their righteousness and does evil, I will put a stumbling block before them and they will die. But because you did not warn them, I will hold you accountable for their blood. But on the other hand, for both, if you do warn the righteous person and they don't sin, they will live and you will be saved yourself.
I mean, there's very much life and death. Life and death is all through that set of verses in terms of perhaps a reframing of the job description of the prophet, who you then see re-spoken in Revelation 11 to John the Revelator as he gives the new covenant version of the prophet, which is actually on these foundations.
Absolutely.
So don't be banal, friends. Don't be shallow and just go, oh, well, you know, that's Old Testament. No. It's reinforced very clearly through the book of Revelation. Yeah. So we are going to see that the sound of separation by those who say, you can't say that, don't speak like that, where it is a sense of we are concerned and God is showing us and this is going to require some change. And come on, guys, there's some transformation required here. Mm-hmm. And just like we've said here, the sound of separation, but the sound of the great defilement, somehow that goes into us like a seed and we go, oh, actually, you're planting something in me that I don't fully understand what the growth of it's going to do. But when I hit the days where I hear those signs, I'm actually better equipped. And there should be a gratitude, even though they're not nice words.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And this is a real preparation word for the separation that's coming.
Can you read the other New Testament verse that we were looking at?
Yeah, absolutely.
Here, and it's putting responsibility into the midst of this separation.
Absolutely. So James 4:17, I think, is it echoes remnants of what Ezekiel's saying here.
Yeah.
If anyone then knows the good they ought to do, so knows what they are meant to do, and does not do it, it is a sin for them. That is tough stuff. Mm-hmm. And so when prophets know what they're called to do, but do not do it, it's sin for them. Apostles, when they know the good they ought to do of releasing, of accept, whatever that is, and do not do it, it's actually sin.
Yes. Yes. I mean, we've slightly been joking, and I am going to make this spurious, but to illustrate the point, we've been laughing about the Olympics, and which is now finished, and it'll be a distant memory very soon. But over the Australian
Ray Gun
breakdancer who scored 0 points,
zero,
because it was so ridiculous. And we're going, how did she get let in? And you've been saying we all have something in our lives.
We do. We're all a bit like Reagan.
Where we think, tell us what your thought on it.
It's like when you think in your head that that you can do something, then you do it and it doesn't turn out the same way it turned out in your head.
Yeah.
We all have a little bit of believing our own PR and our own ego and our own ideas of ourselves. And actually the reality is quite far from our self-belief.
And the whole conversation, why did nobody say?
So why did no one say to her? This might not be your thing.
Come on.
Yeah.
And there's days where you think, why did nobody tell me there was, let's be very, very shallow waters. Why did nobody say there's lipstick on my teeth? You know, why did nobody say? And we start there and we want friends that are better than that who don't let us have, you know,
lipstick
on our teeth, but then don't let us go on a national platform like Ray Gunn at the Olympics dancing like a kangaroo, embarrassing all Australians, you know, perhaps. There's emphasis there that we actually want something better said into our own lives. So I don't want this just to be about, oh, you know, I want to give you permission that you can just be more strident than you should be.
Yeah.
I want a greater biblical understanding of this burden that we have to intend or love, say the things that help the people of God choose righteousness. Yeah.
I think that word is then beholden on us to become anti-fragile.
Yes.
We are in a culture and a day and age where we raise our children to be fragile. And to be easily, don't tell them what they can't do. Don't tell me I can't do that. Don't tell anyone. Let them have a go. Don't tell them that might not be your thing. Don't tell them they can't do that. Because in some ways we want a culture that encourages, etc. But then you lose the honesty of being able to say, well, maybe that's not your thing. Or maybe you actually just need more time and more practice because we are scared of breaking those who are highly fragile. And I think in this, you know, if anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it's sin for them. If I have a friend who I know is not meant to do a thing, but I hold my tongue and let them go on and embarrass themselves, etc., like competing in the Olympics in a sport that they have no talent or practice in whatsoever, then I'm withholding my good responsibility in their life to be a friend who is honest. And I think we need to, in this move into this kind of helping one another to become anti-fragile.
And I think the maturity within the prophetic and maturity within the apostolic, because we're focusing on those two right now, is maturity within the apostolic is I actually am well enough to send you that I don't feel broken by the release, but my relationship is whole enough with you that you keep coming by choice to sit at my table even after being sent, that there is the ebb and flow of I'm here when
relationship.
I'm here when you need me. And I don't close the door because you happen to be released to do something else, you know. And the same with the prophet. I think the great maturing process of prophetic voices is actually more communication skills than it is revelation. Yeah. You can hear all sorts of things that are strong, strident, credible, accurate, but it is in how you express that that is the real maturity, that you are able to take people with you so that they can be transformed. I mean, Jonah is right there, where he's able to turn Nineveh around, and he's saying something really difficult.
Really brittle.
Man, that's impressive communication, that you can save a city.
Yeah.
Incredible. And I, well, Noah, why did you not hit the mark there? Why did nobody come with you? Because all of those are fascinating conversations about how we express the difficulty of the revelation. But the long and the short of it is, my friends, you're going to have a responsibility to skill yourself in the art of communication, of revelation, and the art of wellness if you're a senior leader. And if apostolicity and prophetic greatness does not apply to you and that's not your realm, certainly know that you're about to hear signs that the Lord is going to get you to commentate on in your sphere of influence. This is normal. These difficult signs, we're prepared for these. These signs are good signs. God is coming in holiness. He's a holy God. This uncomfortableness is something that he's going to equip us to deal with. This downturn here, this cry there, this uproar over there in another place, it is okay, my friends. It is okay, my friends. This is part and parcel of what the Word of God is saying to us. Don't fall apart in exposures, defilement, and separation. God has a work that he is doing through his hand, and he will outwork his purposes in this day.
Yeah, very good. So as we kind of conclude on some of these thoughts, your responsibility, I think there's a couple of things I would pray. Number one, I think you need to say from our starting verse, Isaiah 66, verse 6, God, help me to hear and be aware of more than just myself.
Yes.
That is really key.
Number one,
give me ears that hear outside of my own little life and environment.
Yeah.
I think when you hear this non-negotiables, second, number two, you have to pray, God, is there anywhere in me where I have departed from some of my calls, non-negotiables?
Absolutely.
Because you can't call anyone to account if you're living, you know, outside of some non-negotiables here as well. And then I actually think for the prophets and the apostles that are listening, you need to pray for strength to be the fullest version of yourself, the fullest version of your call.
Yes, absolutely. So there's a lot of homework
there. Really is.
Loyal listeners, pod squad, and take some time to mull this over and to seek the Lord on the questions that Sam has left you with. And we are grateful that you go on this journey with us and join us again for another episode of What the Prophets Say. Hello, friends. I've got something exciting to share with you. If you want to reach out and grab hold of our hands so that we can take you to the next level, you need to download our ParTV app today. Go to partv.app, and we have there exclusively podcast Par resources that run alongside the podcast for more activation of the power of God in your life. Make sure that you've not missed this opportunity to dive deeper on the ParTV.app.